While Emmanuel Macron is atop the highest political mountain in France, Theresa May is floundering in a deep mess of her own making. Remember when she called a snap election 10 weeks ago? A poll that was not due for 3 years. The British PM, you may recall, held a 21-point lead over the hapless Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn. May, we were told, would wipe out the left. An electoral annihilation. Well, at the time, I interviewed Isabel Oakeshott, and I tried to goad her into accepting the prevailing wisdom, but she was sceptical.
You know, my record in political predictions is about as woeful as that of all of my colleagues. We're pretty much out of the game at this point. We're boldly carrying on in the hope of scoring a few goals. But really, you know, we haven't even been on the pitch when it comes to the political prediction.
Well, I was just going to say, with a poll lead of 21%, what could possibly go wrong for May during the next 8 weeks?
Well, I think the answer to that lies in all the shocks that we've had in the last 18 months, 2 years. I mean, the outcome of the 2015 election was a surprise. The polls did not predict a majority, albeit a slim majority, for the Conservatives. All the polls pointed to a hung parliament. That didn't happen. And then, of course, you've got Brexit. I mean, very few people really thought that was going to happen. One interesting angle of this, again, is that it's actually an unusually long campaign in a way. She's given herself 7 weeks, and some would say that's uncomfortably long time for, you know, something left field to happen. I don't know what it could be. It could even be something well out of the control of our domestic politicians.
That was Isabel Oakeshott with me back in April. And wasn't she right to raise doubts? As we now know, the British people did not follow the media script. They didn't even give May and the Conservatives a working majority in the Commons. Far from being the strong and stable government May had hoped for, she leads a weak and wobbly government. And as for Corbyn, well, the 68-year-old socialist, he's being mobbed like a rock star at trendy music festivals. So what does all this mean for British politics? And of course, Brexit. Well, who better to chat with than Isabel Oakeshott herself? She's a regular contributor to UK Sky News and the BBC. She's a co-biographer of David Cameron. And it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to Between the Lines. Hi there, Isabel.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
To what extent is Theresa May damaged goods?
She's absolutely damaged goods. I mean, there is absolutely nobody that you talk to in the Conservative Party who thinks that Theresa May will be fighting the next general election as leader of the party. The only question is how long she lasts, and everybody has a different view on this. And some people will think that she might not last even till the autumn. Others say that it's in the party's interest to keep her there until after Brexit has been concluded. The kind of ironic situation here where Theresa May has got the party into a terrible mess, and sort of only Theresa May can get them out of it, but not long term.
Yeah, but to be fair though, I mean, you talk about a terrible mess, and that's the conventional wisdom, but she did win about 42-43% of the vote. Now, in terms of vote share, that was the best performance of any party leader since Thatcher in 83.
You know what, with politics, it's always about expectation, isn't it? And, you know, I found myself in recent weeks sort of saying the same thing, reminding people that Jeremy Corbyn not only lost this election, he actually lost it quite badly. I mean, he has nearly 60 less Labour seats than the Conservative Party have. So by no reckoning is that some kind of victory for Jeremy Corbyn. And you know, the way that the Labour leader has been posturing in recent days is quite extraordinary.
Well, wasn't he treated like a rock star at Gladstonebury, the music festival outside London?
Just ridiculous. I mean, remember, though, that he is probably preaching to the converted there, that in that a lot of the people that did turn out and vote for Jeremy Corbyn were younger people. But he lost the election. Labour can't form a government at the moment. And so, you know, might is right at this point. Theresa May is legitimately there.
Yeah, okay. Now, that said, the Tories have not won a Commons majority of more than 20 in 25 years. A recent YouGov poll showed that Labour outpolls the Tories in every age group under 49. What does that tell you about the future of conservatism in the United Kingdom, Isabel?
What it tells us, I think, is that there is a real ongoing and very deep-seated problem with the Tory brand. And David Cameron was able to overcome that, although not entirely, in that he too failed to win a majority in 2010. But the Conservatives under David Cameron put an awful lot of thinking into modernising the party's image. They did all sorts of things that didn't go down very well at all with their own core voters. So more money for international aid, lots of environmental stuff, gay marriage and so on. Much of that has now sort of drifted away, ebbed away, in fact, under David Cameron during the coalition years. And what people are left with is the impression that the Tories are still the party of the better off, and that at the moment all they're really offering people is being worse off, which is not really a great position to be in.
Yes, but I mean, who's talking about the chronic state of the fiscal outlook? I mean, I read in the last week that the public sector net debt in Britain will soon be about 85% of GDP. Debt's forecast to skyrocket in coming years. There's no real attempt to cut back on spending on either side of politics. So younger people all too often talk about how Corbyn is with it, but he wants to spend more than the British already have.
And you know, the way that you framed the question that you've just asked me there, I think goes to the heart of the problem of communicating this, which is that all those facts and figures sound quite boring and remote to people's everyday lives. And one of the strategies in the Conservative campaign that we've just had was to ridicule Labour and their so-called magic money tree. And, you know, the reality is that actually there is a magic money tree. You know, governments can go on borrowing. And what the Conservative and anybody who worries about huge burgeoning public debt fail to convey is, what does that actually do to you as a voter long term? You know, there is a failure to communicate that there are consequences from picking money from the magic money tree, i.e. interest rates go up, ultimately less jobs and so on and so forth. But that has not been expressed in ways that sort of mean something to the ordinary voter, who rather think, well, if we're going to borrow 20 billion, we might as well borrow 50 and have a good functioning NHS.
Yes. I mean, but you do get the sense with the younger people in Britain and this young generation, they seem to think that socialism is a new idea. And the Tories spent a lot of time, the media as well, slamming, disparaging Corbyn as a relic of the 70s. But that attack doesn't really horrify voters born in the 1990s, does it?
Totally didn't work. And I think there's some really profound lessons for Conservatives to learn from this election. And you can no longer assume that that battle of ideas, you know, market economy, free markets versus socialism, was won decades ago. No, we now have to refight that battle and explain to young people that conservatism is about opportunity, it's about aspiration, it's about a small state and smaller taxation and all those things. And those arguments were not run in this election. I think that next election, I would hope that one would see a very, very different style of campaign, which is much more focused on ideas, not slandering people.
My guest is Isabel Oakeshott, who's a regular contributor to the BBC and UK Sky News. Isabel, is there any credence to the claim made all too often by the likes of The Guardian that the real lesson of this election is that the British people have some Brexit anxiety, even buyer's remorse?
I think that's absolute nonsense, and you have to look at who's propagating that claim. When you look at research that's been done on this, there is almost no evidence of any buyer's remorse. In fact, quite the contrary. You find that a large swathe of people who voted for Remain are very keen that we just damn well get on with it now. And it's ironic that much of the campaign, those on the Remain side, spent complaining that that election campaign that we've just had didn't really talk about Brexit at all. Well, they can't now say then that the verdict of that election said something about Brexit. Can't have it both ways.
Yes, but to be fair, though, I mean, May did seek a mandate for so-called hard Brexit or whatever that means, but she didn't get it right. Doesn't that leave the forces of Leave weakened?
Look, there's no doubt about that. And you can't talk to any Brexiteer without picking up some anxiety about how all this is going to play out. But the reality is that over 80% of people who voted in the election that we've recently had voted for parties that said that they will honour the result of the referendum. And not only that, but they would come out of the single market and the customs union, which is the kind of key bone of contention over so-called hard and soft Brexit. So actually, the result of the election was a huge endorsement for the policy of leaving the EU. And this is why it's all such a mess. You know, we've got differences at the top of the Tory government, at the cabinet level, over whether we should or shouldn't be out of the customs union and what kind of relationship we should have with a single market. And those are replicated exactly at the top of the Labour leadership. One thing we do know is we are leaving the EU and terms will be trashed out. And I suspect we will be leaving the single market. But, you know, there's no guarantees at this point. Brexiteers are nervous, no doubt about
it. Yes, but Brussels is laughing. I saw a Danish cartoon the other day and it had May entering the Brexit negotiations this week with her severed head cradled under her arm. I mean, do you get the sense that the French and the German elites are also laughing at you, Brit?
Well, if they're laughing at us, I would suggest to them that they could spend their time more constructively looking at their own domestic situation. I mean, what kind of countries spend the time laughing at each other? This is a complicated business. It's democracy. They can laugh all they like. We're getting on with the job.
They may be laughing more, though, if Boris Johnson emerges as the Tory leader. How conceivable is that? You mentioned that Theresa May is damaged goods. We all too often hear that Boris Johnson, the former editor of The Spectator magazine, former mayor of London, he's a likely contender. Do you buy that argument?
Do you know what? I think his stock has fallen quite significantly recently. I was looking at some polling on the Tory leadership betting markets this morning, and he is something slumped sort of below 10%.
Really? How do you account for that?
Well, because I think his performance has been very patchy recently. I mean, I'm a massive, or was a massive Boris fan, and there's a few interventions he's made of late which I've thought have been flaky at best. There's a lot of speculation around Philip Hammond. All people need to know about Big Phil is that he's also nicknamed Spreadsheet Phil or Forensic Phil. If he is the answer, I'm not quite sure what the question is we're asking.
Oh, dear, I do.
To be the right one to me.
Isabel, thanks so much for being on Between the Lines
again. Thank you very much.
That was Isabel Oakeshott, a regular contributor to the BBC and Sky News and co-author of the Cameron biography, Call Me Dave.